At the time, I fancied myself the next Emily Dickinson, and I showed the poem to one of my teachers. Full body cringe intensifies. She zeroed in on the first line, which would roughly translate from French to, "Sometimes when I'm alone, I feel my brain shrink," and told me, "That's what really happens. Did you know that?" I hadn't. But in the early 2000s, the internet was already a thing, and by the end of the day, when Rika came home from an afternoon at Inez's place, I knew a lot about the lonely brain. It doesn't shrink, but it withers a little. Loneliness is not abstract and intangible. Metaphors about desert islands and mismatched shoes, Edward Hopper's character staring at windows, Fiona Apple's entire discography. Loneliness is here. It molds our souls, but also our bodies. Right inferior temporal gyri, posterior cingulates, temporoparietal junctions, retrosplenial cortices, dorsal raphe. Lonely people's brains are shaped differently. And I just want mine to not be. I want a healthy, plump, symmetrical cerebrum. I want it to work diligently, impeccably, like the extraordinary machine it's supposed to be. I want it to do as it's told. Spoiler alert, my stupid brain doesn't. It never did. Not when I was 10, not when I was 20, not 8 years later, even though I've tried my best to train it to not expect anything of me. If alone's the baseline, it shouldn't wither. If a cat never gets any treats, he won't miss them, right? I don't know. Looking at my reflection in the window, I'm not so sure anymore. My brain might be dumber than a cat's. It might be one of Rika's blobfish swimming aimlessly in the bowl of my skull. I have no idea. It's June, almost summer. Sunset doesn't come early anymore. If it's dark outside, Levi must have left hours ago. I stand gingerly from the couch, feeling heavy and weightless. An old woman and a newborn calf. Wretched little me, still containing multitudes. But as much as I'd rather wallow in self-pity, this situation is a grave of my own digging. There are things I need to do. People I need to take care of. First, Rocio. She's not in her apartment and doesn't pick up when I call. Because she's with Kaylee trying to forget today's fuster cluck. Because she hates me. Because she's a Gen Z. Could be all three. But what I have to tell her is important. And I've already hurt her chances to get into the PhD program of her dreams enough. So I email her. Whatever happens with Blink, get in touch with Trevor ASAP and ask him to let you stay on the project as the RA. I'd do it, but it's best if it doesn't come from me. Levi will support this. What happened today is my responsibility only and won't reflect on you. Okay, one down. I swallow, take a deep breath, and tap on the Twitter app. Schmack's next. He needs to know what's going on with STC. That if he continues to associate with Marie, things could go south very quickly. I still don't know what the hell happened, but publicly disavowing me might be best for him. I DM him to ask if he has a minute, but he doesn't immediately reply. Probably with the girl, I tell myself. After my disastrous conversation with Levi, the idea of someone brave enough to seize that kind of love, intense and eviscerating and gutting and joyful, fills me with an envy so overwhelming, I have to push back against it with my entire self. I click on Schmack's profile, wondering when's the last time he was online. He hasn't tweeted much in the past week. Mostly hashtag fair graduate admission stuff, comments on the peer review system, a joke about how he'd love to be writing, but with his cat sitting on his laptop, he really can't. Wait. What? I click on the picture attached to the tweet. A black cat is snoozing on top of the keyboard. It's short-haired and green-eyed and not Schrodinger. It can't be. All black cats look the same, after all. And this picture, I can barely make out the cat's face. There's no way to tell who. The background, though. The background I know that backsplash. The dark blue tiles are just like the ones in Levi's kitchen. The ones I stared at for half an hour last week after he bent me over the counter. And even without them, I can see the edge of a carton of soy milk in the picture, which Levi finds gross, B, just gross, but started buying when I told him it was my favorite and... No. No, no, no. Impossible. Schmack is... a 5'8 nerd with a beer belly and male pattern baldness. Not the most perfect, cute, sexy, handsome guy in the world. No, I say, as if it'll somehow make everything go away. The last few disastrous days, Schmack's tweet, the possibility of this. But the picture is still there, with the tiles, the soy milk, and the... Schmack, I whisper, hands shaking. Out of breath, I scroll back up our message history. The girl. The girl. We started talking about the girl when I... When did we first talk about her? I check the dates, vision blurry once again. The day I moved to Houston was the first time he mentioned her to me. Someone from his past. But no. He told me she was married. He said her husband had lied to her. And I'm not, so... But he thought I was. He thought Tim and I were together for a long time, and Tim did lie to me. Levi, I swallow hard. Levi, this is impossible. Things like these, they don't happen in real life, in my life. These coincidences, therefore you've got mail and 90s rom-coms, not for... My eyes fall on the longest message he sent me. I know the shape of her. I go to sleep thinking about it, and then I wake up, go to work, and she is there, and it's impossible. Oh my God. I want to push her against a wall, and I want her to push back. I did that, didn't I? He pushed me against a wall, and I pushed back, and pushed and pushed and pushed, and now I've pushed him away for good, forever, even though, oh, God, he has offered me everything, everything I've ever wanted, and I am such a cowardly, idiotic fool. I wipe my cheek and my eyes fall on the object Levi left on the table. It's a flash drive. Pretty, shaped like a cat's paw. A calico's. My laptop doesn't have a USB port, so I frantically look for an adapter, which, of course, is at the bottom of the damn suitcase. There's one single document on the drive. FMP4. I plop down on the pile of unfolded clothes I just tossed around and immediately click on it. I knew there were cameras everywhere in the Discovery Building, but not that Levi had access to them. And I don't understand why he'd give me 30 minutes of night surveillance footage. I frown, wondering if he uploaded the wrong file. When something small and fair slinks in the corner of the monitor. Felicet. The date says April 14th, only a few days before I move to Houston. Felicet looks a little smaller than the last time I saw her. She trots across the hallway, glances around, then disappears around the corner. My body leans into the screen to follow her. But the movie cuts to April 22nd. Felicet jumps on one of the couches in the lobby. She circles around, finds a good spot and starts napping with her head on her paws. Wet laughter bubbles out of me, and the video changes again. The engineering lab is semi-dark, but Felicet is sniffing tools I've seen Levi use, licking water from the drip tray of the break room's water dispenser, running up and down the stairs, giving herself a bath by the conference room windows. And then, of course, in my office, scratching her claws on my chair's armrests, eating the treats I left out for her, dozing on the little bed I set up in the corner. I'm laughing again. I'm crying again because I knew it. I knew it. And Levi knew it too. This is not something he put together quickly last night. This is hours and hours of combing through footage. He must have known Felicet existed for a while, and I want to strangle him. I want to kiss him. I want everything. I guess this is it. being in love, truly in love. Lots and lots of horrible, wondrous, violent emotions. It doesn't suit me. Maybe it's for the best that I sent Levi away. I could never live with this. It'd raise me to the ground in less than a week, and I want to push her against a wall, and I want her to push back. Oh, Levi. Levi. I can be fearless. I can be as fearless and honest as you are. If you will teach me. I sit back, let the tears flow, watch some more. She really did like my desk, Felicet, more than Rocio's. As the date changes, she nestles around my computer more often. Steps where I found her little paw prints, delicately sniffs the rim of my cup, chews on my computer's power cable, scurries away when the door opens and... Wait. I stop the video and lean forward. It's clear from the shift of the lights that someone is coming inside. But the video immediately cuts to new footage. Who would open the door of my office at 2:37 a.m.? Cleaners always came by late afternoons. Rocio is committed to Blink, but not 2:30 a.m. committed. Hell, I'm not 2:30 a.m. committed. I wipe my tears, press the space bar, and let the video run, hoping for an explanation. It doesn't come, but something else does. A segment dated 2 days ago, again in my office. Just a handful of seconds of Felicet sleeping at my desk. My monitor is on. I don't leave my computer unlocked. Not ever. I stop the video and zoom in as much as I can, feeling like a tinfoil-hatted conspiracy theorist. The video is just high def enough that I can make out, "Is that my Twitter?" I ask no one. Impossible. I'd never log into WWMD on a work computer. For obvious reasons, chief among them that Rocio has a perfect visual of it. But it's right there. Unless I'm hallucinating and it might be keychain access, but still. Felicet, I whisper, do you turn on my computer in the wee hours of the night? Do you log in with my NASA password? Do you use Twitter to catfish underage kittens? She doesn't. She would never. But it sure looks like someone is. And that doesn't make any sense at all. Or maybe it does. Maybe it totally does, given the weird activity from my Twitter account. Shit. I paw at the table for my phone and text Levi. My fingers shake when I read his last texts, but I force myself to power through. B. How do I get access to the complete security footage of the Discovery Building? A minute passes. 3. 7. I call him. No answer. I look at the clock. 11:15. Does he hate me? No more than I hate myself. Is that why he's not answering? Is he asleep? Maybe he's not checking his phone. Shit. I'll email him. How do I get access to the complete security footage of the Discovery Building? Please let me know ASAP. Something weird's going on. Then I have an idea, and don't bother waiting for his reply. I slip my shoes on, grab my NASA badge with a silent prayer to Dr. Curie that it still works, and run out to the Space Center. Something very weird's going on. I'm 99.9% sure that I'm right, and 43% sure that I am wrong. I stub my toe on the edge of the elevator, stumbling into the second floor's hallway with a loud, "Ow!" Very suave, B. Perhaps I shouldn't have worn sandals. Perhaps I should have stayed at home. Perhaps I'm going insane. Whatever. I'll go to my office, check my computer for anything weird, return home with my tail between my legs. What else do I have to do? My scientific career is over. My good name is soon to be besmirched. And I'm at once too emotionally unavailable to be with the man I love, and too in love with him to deal with my own choices. I can spare 20 minutes to sleuth before I go back to browsing the teen drama Hidden Code on Netflix and wishing vegan Chunky Monkey existed. My former office looks like it always does. Homey, cluttered, No sign of Felicet. I sit at my desk, log in. Sure enough, if I navigate to the Twitter page, my password seems to be saved. My heart thuds, my stomach lurches. I look around, but the building is deserted. Okay. Okay, so someone could have conceivably accessed WWMD from this computer. And messaged the STC guy? Yikes. But who? Rocio? No, not my little goth. Levi? Nah, he was in bed with me every night in the past weeks, and most of the time we weren't even sleeping. Who else then? And why would they contact STC posing as me? To make me look bad, but why? These kinds of machinations require a degree of committed hatred that someone like me could never inspire. I'm too boring. I drum my fingers, wondering if I'm a lunatic, when something else occurs to me. Something much, much bigger. If someone logged into my computer, they wouldn't just have access to my stupid social media, but to Blink's server, too. Holy shit! I navigate to the server repository. No way. I click on the folder where the documents pertaining to today's demonstration are. Impossible. I'm crazy. No one would. How the hell did Levi access the logs? God, I hate engineers. They always type so quickly. Was it here? Where the hell did he click? Ah, yes. I open the log for the file used for Guy's brain stimulation. The one I finalized 3 days ago. The one that should be locked to anyone except for me. It was modified last night. At 1:24 a.m.? By me. Except that last night I was tossing and turning in bed. Okay, so it was modified by someone on this computer. Who the fuck?
Are you okay?
I startle so hard, I yelp and throw my mouse across the room. It misses Guy by a few inches. Oh my God. I press my hand against my mouth. I'm sorry, you scared me and I laugh into my palm, high on relief. Low-key thankful I didn't shit my pants. It was touch and go for a second. I'm so sorry. I wasn't trying to kill you for the second time in one day. He smiles, leaning against the doorframe.
Third time's the charm.
Oh God. I press a hand against my forehead. My heart's calming down, and I remember the last time I saw Guy. He didn't look good because I gave him a seizure. How are you? He gestures at himself with a self-deprecating smile.
Back to my hunky self. You don't look too good, though.
I'm having an interesting day. Guy, I want to apologize for what happened today. I take full responsibility for—
You shouldn't.
I should. I lift my hand. I absolutely should. It looks like something weird is happening. I'll show you. But that doesn't matter. With your safety at stake, I should have been more careful. I take full responsibility and—
You shouldn't,
he repeats, his tone a touch firmer. Something about it rubs me wrong. His eyes are usually a warm golden brown, but tonight there's an odd coldness about them. I realize that I have no idea why he's here, well past 11, in my office. After a day spent at the hospital, shouldn't he be resting? I'm pretty sure he should be resting. Are you? Did you forget something? I stand to obstruct his view of my monitor, not quite knowing why. It's late.
Yeah.
He shrugs. I'm acutely conscious that he's blocking the only exit. I'm also acutely conscious that I'm a raving lunatic. This is Guy, my friend, Levi's friend, an astronaut. I just gave him a seizure, for fuck's sake. Of course, he looks weird. Are you? I was heading home. I'm done with what I came for.
Really?
Yeah. Want to leave together? He doesn't move.
You said there was something weird you wanted to show me?
Why is he not smiling?
No,
I wipe my palm against the side of my thigh. It's gross, clammy. My grandmother's ring catches on the seam. I misspoke.
I don't think you did,
My heart skips several beats. Then it gallops 20 times faster.
It doesn't matter.
I need my stupid voice to shake less.
I gotta go. It's late, and I'm technically off blink. I shouldn't even be here. Boris will have me arrested.
I lean back, turn off my computer, keeping my eyes on Guy the entire time. Then I make my way to the door.
Well, have a good night. Could you let me through? I can't quite
be.
He doesn't move. His tone is slightly reproachful.
You're making things complicated for me.
I swallow, audibly.
Why?
Because.
Because what?
Is it the seizure? I really didn't mean to.
I think it would be hypocritical of me to get testy about that.
He sighs, and I'm instantly aware of how much larger than me he is. He's nothing like Levi, but I'm as big as five bananas in a trench coat, which might be a problem. What's going on? I whisper. Guy?
What have you told Levi?
He asks, his expression a mix of calm and irritation. A parent cleaning up after a child spilled a glass of milk. Told Levi?
About the security footage. Did you talk to him on the phone after you emailed him?
I freeze. How do you know I emailed him?
Answer me, please.
How do you know? About my email. I retreat until the backs of my legs hit my desk.
Bea.
He rolls his eyes.
I've been in and out of your email for a long time, making sure Levi's messages couldn't reach you, creating some miscommunications. You know, there's a reason websites tell you to use difficult passwords. Marie Monamore 123.
It was you, I gasp, trying to step even farther away. There's nowhere to go. How did you get into my computer?
I set it up.
He gives me an incredulous look.
You're not very good at technology, are you?
I frown, pulled right out of shock and into furious rage. Hey, I can code in three programming languages.
Is one of them HTML?
I flush. HTML is valid, you STEM lord. And I'm minored in computer science. And why the hell were you in my damn email?
Because, B, you wouldn't just mind your damn business.
He takes a step toward me, nostrils flaring.
Did you know that the Sullivan prototype should have been called Kowalski Sullivan? Of course, Peter had to get his head smashed.
He stops, pausing for a moment.
Okay, this came out wrong. I was sorry when it happened. But my work on Blink was erased. By virtue of dying, Peter got all the credit, and it would have been fine. But then Levi offered to lead Blink out of some misplaced guilt, and they chose him over me. I had no control over something I spent years working on.
His voice rises. He comes closer, and I flatten against the desk.
And for so long, I was sure Blink wouldn't get done, that it'd be delayed, that Levi would move on to other things. He wasn't even doing neuroimaging anymore, did you know that? If it hadn't been for Peter, he'd still be at the Jet Propulsion Lab. But no, he had to poach my project.
What did you do? I murmur.
I did what I had to. This morning, I took a few caffeine pills just to be, you know, excitable, and I fudged the protocols. But you put me in this situation. You and Levi. Because B. Oh, B, he was obsessed with you. The second NIH nominated you, he had to make Blink happen. And I tried to do what I could, make you guys fight a little. Little delays, missing files. For a while, you seemed stuck, and I hoped time would run out and you'd go back to NIH.
His eyes are a little crazed.
But you cracked it, and I had to do it. Today had to happen. They won't let Levi stay on the project.
On Twitter. What did you do on Twitter? He runs a hand down his face.
That was... I wasn't going to involve you, believe it or not. But when I found out that you weren't really married, that Levi lied to me, I was very upset. It didn't take long to realize that. I cannot believe you're fucking him, B. Your Twitter was on your computer, and I'd been following your online identity, so I knew what to do. Oh my God. You were supposed to hate him. When NIH selected you, Levi told me you had issues in the past, and I thought perfect.
He sighs like he's deeply tired.
And then you fell in love. Who does that?
Are you crazy?
I'm angry, because it would have worked out great if you hadn't noticed the security footage. I guess I got a bit sloppy at editing myself out. Why were you looking at it anyway?
I shake my head. I'm not explaining Felicet to this asshole.
You are crazy.
Yeah.
He closes his eyes.
Maybe.
I look around for, I'm not sure what, a siren, a baseball bat, one of those portable transporters from Star Trek.
Let me go, I say.
B.
He opens his eyes.
You don't need to be an evil mastermind to acknowledge that I cannot let you go.
You sort of have to. You can't do anything to me. There are cameras.
Whose footage we established I can doctor, thanks to your RA, by the way. I only got access to the surveillance circuit after catching her in flagrante.
You still used your badge to come in?
I didn't, actually. Pretty easy to clone an anonymous badge.
My fingers shake when I grip my desk.
What's your plan, then?
He takes something out of his pocket.
No. No, 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 no. Is that a gun?
I gasp out.
Yeah.
He sounds almost apologetic. My entire world stops. I'm used to being scared. I live my life in fear. Fear of being abandoned. Fear of failing. Fear of losing everything. But this is different. Is it terror? Real hindbrain terror? Is this how the lady feels in Scream and Scream 2, 3, and 4? When she realizes that the caller is in the house. Did they ever make 5? God, will I die before Scream 5 hits theaters?
What? Where did you even? Is that real?
Yeah, really easy to get one.
He holds the gun like he hates it almost as much as I do.
NRA's crazy here.
I guess I'm having the full Texas experience, I mumble, numb. This cannot be happening. I'm well acquainted with Stemlord's disregard for women, but one wanting to kill me? A step too fucking far.
Do you even know how to use that?
They teach you during astronaut training. Insert Space Force joke.
He laughs once, humorlessly.
But I won't need to use it, because we're going up to the roof. Poor little bee. In a few short days, she lost everything. Couldn't handle the stress. Decided to jump.
I will do no such.
Guy points the gun at me.
Oh shit. I'm going to die. In my stupid office. Killed by a Stemlord. I'm going to die without having had a cat. I'm going to die without having admitted to Levi that I love him more than I thought possible. Without a chance to show him, to show myself that I can be brave. At least Marie had Pierre for a while. At least she took a chance. At least she tried not to act like the stupid coward I've been, and oh God, maybe if I beg Guy, he'll let me text Levi, and I'll be able to tell him. I just want to tell him. It seems such a waste not to have told him, and
a meowing sound. We both turn. Felicet is on the filing cabinet near the door, growling at Guy. He gives her a confused look.
What the hell is?
Felicet pounces on him with a shriek, clutching his head and clawing at him. Guy thrashes around, leaving the door empty. I sprint out of the room, running as fast as I can. Not nearly fast enough. I can hear steps right behind me.
Stop! Be stop or I'm fucking going to!
I'm at the end of the hallway. My legs are giving out, my lungs on fire. He's going to kill me. Oh my God, he's going to kill me.
I turn the corner and dart to the landing. Guy yells something I cannot make out. I take my phone out to call 911, but there is a string of loud noises behind me. Shit! Has he shot me? No, not a gunshot. I turn around, expecting to see him come at me, but... Levi? He and Guy are tussling on the floor, grunting and struggling and rolling around in a vicious, violent embrace. I stare at them for several seconds, open-mouthed, paralyzed. Levi's bigger, but Guy has a fucking gun. And when he adjusts his grip to aim at Levi, I... Levi! I don't even think about it. I run back to where the fight is happening and kick Guy in the ribs so forcefully, I feel a zing of pain travel from my toes up my spinal cord. I blink, and by the time my eyes are open again, Levi's pinning Guy to the floor, holding his arms behind his back. The gun has skittered several feet away. It is, in fact, very close to me. I look at it, consider picking it up, decide not to. Levi.
You okay, B?
He sounds winded. I nod. He... Guy is struggling, demanding to be let go. Swearing. Insulting Levi, me, the world. My legs feel like Jell-O, the off-brand one, which doesn't bounce very well. I could use a puke bucket.
B,
Levi says. Yeah?
Can you do something for me, sweetheart?
Unlikely. Yeah?
I want you to take a step to your right. Another? Another?
My knee hits the edge of one of the lobby couches. Levi smiles like he's incredibly proud of me.
Perfect. Now sit down.
I do it, confused. There's something wet on my hand. I look down. Felicette is licking my fingers. Why?
Because I'll need to restrain Guy until security gets here, and I won't be able to catch you when you pass out.
But I... My eyelids flutter closed and... Well, you know the drill by now. 25. Oriens lacunosum moleculare interneurons. Courage. Not to be whiny, I tell the nurse with a desperate yet grateful yet really desperate smile. I appreciate everything you're doing, but NIH has notoriously crappy health insurance, and if I told you what a recent PhD makes a year, you'd discharge me immediately and give me $10 for the cab home.
NASA will cover this,
Kaylee says. She's on the bed next to me, leaning against my pillow as she shows me the wonders of TikTok. I'm clearly going to have to download this time-sinking black hole of an app. Or you'll sue them, Rocio adds from the guest chair. She sprawled comfortably, a GRE prep manual on her lap and her booted feet on top of the covers. The things I let her do just because she is, as Kaylee would put it, my fave. I'm not going to sue NASA. What if they decide to call their next Mars rover the Marie Curie, but they end up misspelling it the Mariah Carey? I mull it over. I might sue in that case. Rocio gives me a pleased, I know you, smile. My phone buzzes. Rika.
OMG, you're on the news.
Rika.
Here in Norway, in this pub I met.
Rika.
Is this what stardom feels like?
I close my eyes, which proves to be a mistake. The image of Rika climbing over the counter of a Bergen dive bar and pointing at the TV is disturbingly vivid. B.
You don't even speak Norwegian.
Rika.
No, but the news lady said NASA and Houston, and they put the mugshot of the guy on the screen.
Rika.
LOL, the guy. I'm hilarious.
B. Are you drunk?
Rika. Listen, my favorite sister almost got killed last night. I'm allowed to drown my trauma in some Norwegian liquor that I cannot pronounce.
B.
I'm your only sister.
Rika. Smiley face emoji. I lock my phone and slide it under the pillow. I don't even know why I'm in a hospital. The doctors said that me passing out was concerning, and I almost laughed in their faces.
I just want to go home.
Stare out of the window. Think wistfully about the ephemeral nature of human existence. Watch cat videos.
Here it says that a breast means up to date and has nothing whatsoever to do with boobs.
Rocio stares at the vocab section of her manual.
Sounds fake.
Kaylee and I exchange a worried look.
And bombastic is a real word? This can't be right.
Babe, I'll start tutoring you again as soon as NASA's not being sabotaged anymore.
I give Kaylee a grateful smile. She and Rocio were in the hospital room this morning when I woke up, and they've stuck around since then like the amazing human beings they are. I now know more about body decomposition and makeup palettes than I thought I ever would, but I regret nothing. This is almost nice. Then Boris enters the room with a bleak expression, closely followed by Levi. My heart flutters. When I asked about him this morning, the girls told me he was with law enforcement in the Discovery Building. He meets my eyes, gives me a small smile, and sets a bag and a box of my favorite brand of vegan brownies on my bedside table. Boris stands beside the bed, rubbing his forehead, looking tired, aggravated, at the end of his rope. I wonder if he slept at all. Poor man.
I'm at an impasse, B, he sighs. NASA firmly instructed me not to apologize to you because it would be admissible evidence if you decided to sue, but...
He shrugs.
I am sorry, and...
Don't, I smile. Don't piss off your lawyers over this. I was right there with you, thinking that it was my error. I didn't know Guy was batshit crazy, and I worked with him every day. How could you?
Guy will... He is fired, of course. And there will be legal repercussions. We'll resume Blink the second the Discovery Building is not caked in yellow tape with another demonstration. I explained everything to NIH and my superiors, and of course I am begging you on my knees to return.
You're standing,
Rocio points out, unimpressed. Levi looks away, biting back a smile.
Rocio, I scold her gently. What? Make him grovel harder.
I give her a fond look. None of this was his fault.
Plus, think how good your PhD applications will look when they come with a recommendation letter from the director of research at the Johnson Space Center.
I hold Boris's gaze. After a moment, he nods, defeated. He needs a nap, or 9 coffees.
I'd be happy to, Ms. Corderial. You deserve it.
Will you mention that I had sex at work with the most beautiful woman in the world?
She glances at Kaylee, who blushes prettily. He rubs his temple.
I actually forgot about that.
Is that a firm no? Because it's one of my proudest accomplishments.
Boris leaves a few minutes later. Levi pulls up a chair and sits next to me to catch us up.
I'm not sure what the charges are, but Guy was so high up. Had access to so much information. We'll have to double-check every single chunk of code we ever wrote. Every piece of hardware. It's a setback. A big one. But Blink will be fine, ultimately.
He doesn't seem too concerned.
He has a kid, doesn't he? Kaylee asks.
Yeah. He had a nasty divorce last year, which I don't think helped with whatever happened. I was with him a lot, but I didn't see it. I really didn't.
Obviously, Rocio mutters. Levi and I share an amused look, and
it sticks a little bit. It's hard for me to let go of his eyes, and for him to let go of mine. I suspect it's because the last time I saw him was such a mess, and the time before an even messier mess. And now we're here in front of this messy mess, and it's difficult to breathe.
Well,
Kaylee says, jumping up.
Rocio and I gotta go.
Rocio frowns.
Where?
To bed.
But it's 3 in the afternoon.
Kaylee drags her up by the wrist. But when they're at the door, Rocio frees herself and comes to stand in front of Levi.
I must thank you for saving Bee's life, she says solemnly. To me, she is like a mother. The mother I never had.
You have an amazing mother back in Baltimore, I point out.
and I'm only 5 years older than you. I am ignored.
I want to give you a token to acknowledge your contributions.
There's no need,
Levi says just as solemnly. Rocio rummages in her jeans pocket and offers him an unwrapped, slightly squished red gumball.
Thank you. This is...
He looks at the gum.
A thing that I now have.
Rocio nods somberly, and then Levi and I are alone. Well, with the gumball.
Did you want it?
He asks me. I could never. It's your reward for saving my life.
Pretty sure you saved your own life.
It was a team effort. There is a small lull, a not exactly unpleasant silence. I find that I can't quite meet Levi's gaze, so I glance around. Are the brownies for me?
I wasn't sure what the food options were.
He wets his lips.
The bag's for you, too.
Oh. I peek. Inside, there's something wrapped in newspaper. I put it in my lap and start unrolling it. It's not Guy's heart that you cut out of his chest, is it? He shakes his head.
I already fed that to Schrodinger.
I pause, mid-action. I'm so sorry. I cannot imagine how hard it must be. He's one of your closest friends, and the fact that he was so jealous of you and Peter is...
Yeah, I'll go talk to him. When it's been a while and I want to punch him less. But for now...
He shrugs.
You should open that.
I resume. It's about 5 layers before I can make out what it is. A mug? I turn it around and break into a grin.
Oh my God! Yoda best neuroscientist, you had it made!
Look inside, too.
I do.
A bobblehead? Is this Marie Curie?
I lift it up, grinning.
She's standing in front of her lab bench and she's wearing... This was her wedding gown, did you know that?
I didn't.
He hesitates before adding.
I won this in middle school. 2nd place at the science fair. The beakers she's holding glow in the dark.
My smile vanishes slowly. I'm too busy staring at Marie's pretty face to realize that I've heard that science fair story once before. No, I didn't hear it. I read it. On my... My arms fall into my lap. You know about... He nods.
I reviewed the security footage. I didn't notice at first. But after you wrote that text... I was jogging, by the way, so maybe next time give me 15 minutes or so before jumping headfirst into danger alone. After your text, I looked at the footage more closely and saw your computer.
I stare at him. I'm wholly unprepared for this conversation.
Did you know all along?
No. I shake my hand vehemently. The picture. Schrodinger was... You tweeted it. And then I had no idea. Before yesterday. Levi just leans forward, elbows on his knees, and looks at me patiently.
Me neither.
He smiles wryly.
Or I wouldn't have talked about you with you so much.
Oh. I flush as vermilion as a cardinal male at the peak of mating season. My heart thrashes in my chest, also like a cardinal male at the peak of mating season. Right. The things he said. I want to push her against a wall and I want her to push back. The things he said.
Are you okay?
He asks, concerned. It's warranted. I might be in the midst of a cardiac event. I'm fine. Have you ever seen You've Got Mail?
Nope.
He gives me a hesitant look.
Maybe we could watch it together?
Yes, I want to say. I even open my mouth, but no sound comes out of my stupid, stubborn, petrified vocal box. I try again. Nothing. Still nothing. My fingers clench the sheets and I study the amused, knowing expression in his eyes, like he fully understands what's going on inside me.
Did you know that she used to be a governess? Marie Curie.
I nod, slightly taken aback. She had an agreement with her sister. Marie worked as a governess and helped her sister pay for med school. Then once her sister had a job, they flipped.
So you know about Kazimierz Zarafsky?
I tilt my head. The mathematician?
He eventually became one. A good one, too. But initially, he was just one of the sons of the family Marie worked for. He and Marie were the same age. Both exceptionally...
nerdy.
You know the type.
He flashes a smile, which fades almost immediately.
They fell in love, but he was rich, she wasn't, and back then things weren't as simple as wanting to marry someone.
His parents separated them, I murmur. They were heartbroken.
Maybe it was destiny. If she'd stayed in Poland, she wouldn't have met Pierre. The two of them were very happy by all accounts. The idea of radioactivity was hers, but Pierre helped her out. Kazimierz was a mathematician. He might not have been as involved in her research.
Levi shrugs.
It's all a bunch of what-ifs.
I nod.
But he never really got over Marie. Zarovsky, I mean. He married a pianist, had children, named one Maria, which is amusing, studied in Germany, became a professor at Warsaw Polytechnic, worked on geometry, I believe. He lived a full life. And yet, as an old man, he could be found sitting in front of Marie Curie's statue in Warsaw, staring for hours, thinking about who knows what. A bunch of what-ifs, maybe.
The green of Levi's eyes is so bright, I can't look away.
Maybe about whatever little personality quirk of Marie made him fall for her a handful of decades before.
Do you think? My cheeks are wet. I don't bother wiping them. Do you think she used to cook terrible stir fries?
I can see that.
He bites the inside of his cheek.
Maybe she also insisted on feeding a murder of imaginary cats.
I'll have you know that Felicette saved my life.
I saw that. It was very impressive.
Carts roll in the hallway outside. A door closes and another opens. Someone laughs. Levi?
Yes.
Do you think they, Marie and Pierre and the mathematician and everyone else, do you think they ever wished they'd just never met? Never been in love? He nods as though he's considered the matter before.
I really don't know, Bea. But I do know that I never have. Not once.
The hallway is suddenly silent. An odd musical chaos pounds sweetly inside my head. A precipice, this one. A deep, dangerous ocean to leap into. Maybe it's a bad idea. Maybe I should be scared. Maybe I will regret this. Maybe, maybe, maybe. Maybe this feels like home. Levi. He looks at me, calm, hopeful, so patient, my love. Levi, I... The door opens with a sudden noise.
How are you feeling today, Bea?
My doctor steps in with a nurse in tow. Levi's eyes linger on me for one more second, or five. But then he stands.
I was just about to head out.
I watch his small smile as he waves goodbye. I watch the way his hair curls on his nape as he steps out. I watch the door close behind him. And when the doctor starts asking me questions about my useless parasympathetic nervous system, it's all I can do not to glare at her.
2 days. 2 days I'm in the damn hospital. Then the doctor discharges me with a squinty, distrustful, "There doesn't seem to be anything wrong with you." Rocio picks me up with our rental. In ancient Egypt, female corpses were kept at home until they decomposed to avoid necrophilia at the embalmers. Did you know that? Now I do. And is just as squinty and distrustful when I ask her to drop me off at the Discovery Building, and to please leave the car in the parking lot. There's no police tape inside. In fact,
I meet several non-Blink engineers in the hallway. I smile politely, shrug off their curious, intrigued looks, and head for my office. There's a do not enter sign on the wall. I ignore it. I walk out 6 hours later. Not quite gracefully. I'm carrying a large box, and I can't see my feet, so I trip a lot. Who am I kidding? I always trip a lot. In the car, I tinker with my phone, searching for a good song, and find none I care to listen to. It's dark already, past sundown. For some unfathomable reason, the silent lights of the Houston skyline make me think of Paris at the turn of the 20th century. The Belle Époque, they called it. While Dr. Curie holed up in her shed/lab, Henri de Toulouse-Lautrec chugged absinthe at the Moulin Rouge. Edgar Degas creeped on ballet dancers and bathing ladies. Marcel Proust bent over his desk, writing books I'll never get around to reading. Auguste Rodin sculpted thinking men and grew impressive beards. The Lumiere brothers laid the foundation for masterpieces such as Citizen Kane, The Empire Strikes Back, the American Pie franchise. I wonder if Marie ever went out at night. Every once in a while. I wonder if Pierre ever pried a beaker full of uranium ore out of her hand and dragged her to Montmartre for a walk or a show. I wonder if they had fun in the few years they had together. Yes, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they had a blast. And I'm sure, like I've never been sure before, that she never regretted anything, that she treasured every second. The solar lights are on in Levi's yard, just bright enough for me to see the hummingbird mint, purple and yellow and red. I smile and lift the large, light box from the passenger seat, stopping to coo at it. I know about the spare key hidden under a pot of rosemary, but I ring the doorbell anyway. While I wait, I try to spy into the air holes I carved at the top. Can't see much.
B?
I look up, breathless. Not scared. I'm not scared anymore. Hi. He's so handsome. Stupidly, unjustly handsome. I want to look at his stupidly, unjustly handsome face for as long as I possibly can. Could be a minute. Hopefully, it'll be 70 years.
Are you okay?
I take a deep breath. Schrodinger's here, too, staring up quizzically at me and my cargo. Hi.
Hi. Are you?
Levi reaches for me, abruptly stops himself.
Hey.
I was wondering. I lift up the box, hold it out to him, clear my throat. I was wondering, do you think poor Schrodinger would hate us if we adopted another cat? Levi blinks at me, confused.
What do you?
Inside the box, Felicet explodes in a long, plaintive meow. Her pink nose peeks out from one of the air holes, her paw from another. I let out a wet, bubbly, happy laugh. Turns out I'm crying again. Through the tears, I see understanding on Levi's face, then pure, overwhelming, knee-shaking joy in his eyes. But it's only a moment. By the time he reaches over to take the box from my hands, he is grounded, solid, profoundly, quietly happy.
I think,
he says slowly, carefully, his voice a little thick,
that we won't know until we try.
Epilogue. Here's my favorite piece of trivia in the whole world. Dr. Marie Sklodowska-Curie and Dr. B. Königswasser-Ward showed up to their wedding ceremonies wearing their lab gowns. Well, clothes. Gowns aren't really a thing anymore. Unless you're walking the red carpet at the Met Gala or, well, getting married, I guess. Which I was, but I was wearing a Target dress. Yep, the Target dress, which I sometimes wear at work. And I work in a NASA lab, which technically makes it lab clothes. I guess I'm a pragmatic gal, too. Levi and I aren't going to have a ceremony until this summer. July 26th, to be precise. I'd explain why I picked that date, but it might shift your opinion of me from quirky Marie Curie fangirl to dangerously obsessive stalker. So, yeah, I'll let you Google it if you must. Anyway, even though we're married, only a handful of people know. Rika, for instance. Should I hyphenate my name too? Rika Koningswasser Ward. Nice ring to it, huh? Penny and Lily, our impromptu witnesses. Schrodinger and Felicette, of course, but they didn't care too much when we told them. They just blinked sleepily at us and went back to napping on top of each other, stirring only when a dollop of celebratory whipped cream appeared. Ungrateful creatures. I love them. It's a bit odd, the way our elopement came about. I noticed Levi's frustration when, around the 9th time he proposed, I told him that I did want to marry him, but I was traumatized by the last-minute split of my previous engagement and by the thousands of dollars wasted in security deposits. But the solution to this mess appeared to me in a dream. That's a lie. I was plucking my eyebrows. I secretly applied for a marriage license. Then, on a random Thursday morning, I told him I wanted to drive the truck. He was not a fan, but hit it well. He thought we were heading to work, hence the Target dress. But instead, I sneakily navigated us to the courthouse. In the already crowded early morning parking lot, while he looked around to figure out where the hell we were, I told him I'd marry him that very day. That I couldn't be afraid of him leaving me at the altar if we'd already tied the knot. That I wouldn't even make him sign a prenup to prevent him from claiming rights to my limited edition Empire Strikes Back DVD, because I wasn't planning on divorcing him ever. I guess I should properly ask, I said, after methodically explaining my reasoning. Will you marry me, Levi? To which he said,
yeah.
Hoarse, tongue-tied, breathless, handsome. So handsome that I had to kiss him, a little tearfully. And by a little, I mean a lot. And by tearfully, I mean that snot was involved. It was ugly, kids. And it was beautiful. After a 94-second ceremony, we drove to the Space Center, made up an excuse for being late, and I had lean cuisine at my desk while frowning at the terrible signal dropout in the astronauts' MRI scans. I only saw Levi once in public, and the one interaction we were able to sneak was his hand briefly brushing my lower back. Yikes, right? It was the best day of my life. Unlike today, today is going to be the worst day of my life. It's 8:43 a.m., and I already know it. Are you actually going to do this? Rika asks, staring at the hashtag Fair Graduate Admissions Race start line banner above our heads. My heart says no. And your body? My body also says no, but louder. She nods, unsurprised. You can probably do it. The 5K, I mean. For the love of the goddess, do not attempt the half marathon. That's a lot of trust from someone who has my same wimpy constitution and should know better. It has nothing to do with constitution and everything to do with Levi training you for, it's been what, 8 months? 8 months too long. We exchange a glance, laughing at each other. I love having Rika here. I love that she and Levi arranged her visit behind my back and surprised me with it. I love her nagging us because we have only vegan food in the house, and she's sick of competing with the cats for a meager slice of chicken breast. I love that she's hooking up with Nose Tongue Dude while she's here. I love her. I love all of this. Are you going to do the race? I ask. Yeah, it's for a good cause. Not that I fully understand what a PhD is, what graduate admissions are, or even why someone would voluntarily go to school, but if you say you're helping traditionally underrepresented groups, I'm on board. Rocio and I will walk and chat. She's planning to talk to me about yet uncaught serial killers. Lovely. isn't she? I cannot believe you let her move back to Baltimore.
I know. But she got into her dream school, has an apartment with her dream girlfriend, and I'm pretty sure she's a leader in the local Wiccan community. I'm just glad she and Kaylee managed to be here for the 5K after putting so much effort into organizing it. A young woman walks up to Rika with a smile.
Excuse me, Dr. Königswasser?
Oh, she points at me with her thumb. Not quite the Königswasser you're looking for.
Yep, this is actually my evil twin. I'm B. Kate, I'm a psychology grad at UMN.
She shakes my hand enthusiastically.
I've been following At What Would Marie Do for years, and I just wanted to say how cool this is.
She gestures around herself. 3,000 people signed up for the 5K, but it feels like 3 million showed up, perhaps because it turned into a grad school fair of sorts. The organizing committee decided to allow universities that pledged to guarantee a fair, holistic admission process the opportunity to set up stands to recruit at the finishing lines. I glance at the crowd, spotting Annie and waving at her. We went out for dinner last night, since she flew in for the race a day early. It's not strange, having a meal with your former best friend who once broke your heart, but we're slowly mending things. Plus, she helped out a lot with the logistics of the 5K. I always thought that revealing my identity would ruin the fun of running WWMD for me, and I was frustrated when Guy's actions made it impossible for me to do otherwise. Remember when I said that I was scared of being doxxed by creeps who look back wistfully to Gamergate? Well, that happened. A little bit. There was some unpleasantness as the news spread and I went public. Some awkwardness. A period of adjustment. But one day, Rocio called and said, I always suspected that deep down you were cool, but I figured it was just wishful thinking. Instead, look at you. That's when I knew everything would be all right. And with time, it was. Being old news is such a relief.
Thank you so much for coming all the way from Minnesota, Kate.
You flew in too, right? From Maryland?
I actually live here now, in Houston. Left NIH for NASA last year. Blink's demonstration was a resounding success. Well, the first was a resounding disaster, but the second one went so well, got so much positive attention, likely because of the botched first attempt and the publicity it generated, that Levi and I ended up having our pick of jobs. You know how I thought I'd end up living in an underpass with a pile of angry spiders? A month later, I was offered Trevor's job. And when I declined, Trevor's boss's position. That's life in academia, I guess. The agony and the ecstasy. Ebbs and flows. Did I fantasize about taking the job and forcing Trevor to write me a report on how men are stupider because their brains have lower neural densities? Often, and with almost sexual pleasure. In the end, Levi and I considered NIH. We considered NASA. We considered quitting. Building a lab in a retrofitted shed, Curie style, and going rogue. We considered faculty positions. We considered Europe. We considered industry. We considered so much we were doing nothing but considering for a while. And having sex. And rewatching The Empire Strikes Back about once a week. In the end, we always came back to NASA. Maybe just because we have good memories here. Because deep down we like the weather, because we truly enjoy annoying Boris, because the hummingbirds rely on us for their mint. Or because, as Levi said one night on the porch, my head in his lap as we looked at the stars, this house is in a really good school district. He only briefly met my eyes, and I'm 74% sure he was blushing. But we formally accepted NASA's offers the following day, which means that now I have my permanent lab right next to his. A year ago, it would have been a nightmare. Funny how these things go, huh? The 2-minute warning whistles, and people start trickling to the start line. A large hand wraps around mine and pulls me toward the crowd.
Did you come get her because you know that otherwise she'll run away?
Rika asks. Levi smiles.
Oh, she wouldn't run. More like a brisk walk.
I sigh. I thought I'd successfully left you behind.
The pink hair gave you away.
I don't think I can do this.
I'm fully aware.
The longest I've run so far is less than 5K.
You can start walking anytime.
His hand pushes against my lower back, where my newest tattoo resides. Just the outline of Levi's house, with two little kitties inside.
Give it a try.
You're not going to slow down your pace to match mine, are you?
Of course I am.
I roll my eyes. I always knew you hated me. I grin up at him. When he smiles back, my heart picks up. I love you, I think. And you are my home. Someone blows one long whistle. I look ahead, take a deep breath, and start running. This is Brooke Bloomingdale. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of Love on the Brain by Allie Hazelwood. This program was directed by Alan Tobin. Executive producer, Karen Jaconsky. Edited by BookTrack Post. Text copyright, 2022 by Allie Hazelwood. Production copyright, 2022, Penguin Random House, LLC. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.